Hi, Ulysses.
Hello there. Well, I'm sorry.
I'm going to show you something.
Okay.
Can you see?
Oh, fun. Oh, did we move rooms?
Are you on mute or is my volume down?
I think your volume's down.
My volume's down? All right.
Yeah. Because I'm loud. So.
Give me a moment. All right.
Can you hear me now?
Can you hear me now? Yes, I can hear you now. So,
move rooms, I see.
Challenging. It may be challenging for you to hear everything that's going to happen today. So what spot would work best to set you up? Because I don't have a way to link in. We moved to 700 because it's bigger, obviously.
Right.
So we should have steady service, but especially if you're going to want to speak and be heard, maybe if I put you right next to Gabe,
yeah, that,
right?
The, yeah, that might be the better option. It'll just be a matter of reminding him to keep checking the chat function, because I'll try not to yell out loud, to check the chat function, and then I'll chime in when I'm recognized, and then just to kind of repeat things if people are saying things that are not audible, to just kind of repeat what's happening, just so it, that might be helpful to everybody, not just me, in a big room. So. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
I still want to see if we can get more volume for you. I mean, this is up as loud as it will go. But let's check the input.
Gotta love technology.
I know.
UA resolution on infrastructure and campus technology. With all
input volume. So I got the input volume turned up. Why does it want to keep going down? All right, I don't want to use ambient noise reduction. We're just going to deal with it. Output is as loud as it can go. All right, is that, can you hear any better now?
Yeah, I can hear you all just fine.
Okay. We're going to need this. Gabe, because you are probably going to be the person, like, this is Ulysses, this is also recording.
Okay. That's great.
And
so we are going to hit fireball full capacity if we have not already. I think that's something to look at. She's not here because we didn't expect, I expect it's 30 feet. This is not satisfactory. We should be made. All right.
So Jeremy's pretty accustomed to doing.
Is this working?
Is this working? Yep, I can. Jeremy's pretty used to. There you go.
I got it.
I was gonna say, Jeremy, you're pretty used to doing this.
See if I can. 1 second.
Boom. I got things. Yeah. Can you hear me? Okay.
Barely. Even with the sound all the way up, it's pretty loud in here.
Okay, I'm gonna type to you.
Okay, let me get the chat window up here so I can see what you're saying. Yeah, I can get by context and a little bit of lip reading, but
gotcha.
There you go. Speak directly down.
So, hello everyone. Welcome to the second meeting of the University Assembly back in the year 2017-2018. This is an unusual number of guests for us, so please bear with us as we figure out the logistics. But with that, I'm going to call the meeting to order. So, the meeting is now called to order. Okay. So, could the clerk please call the call the roll. Joe Anderson here. Matthew Battaglia.
Absent.
Linda Cotman.
Here.
Marie Anderoo.
Here.
Kevin Fitch.
Here.
Martin Hatch.
Here.
Robert Howard.
Absent.
Mirage.
Here.
Gabriel Conklin.
Here.
John Walker.
Here.
Jeremy Cruzan.
Here.
Ellis.
Here.
Ali Martinez.
Here.
Elena.
Pam.
Here.
Do we have Ulysses?
Thank you. Catherine Quinn.
Here.
Ulysses.
Ulysses. Here. Charles Malum.
Here.
Anna Wayman.
Here.
They're all on the table. Yeah. Is that the whole? Okay. So,
motion to move the presentation from Black Students United to the close of the agenda.
Second.
All right. Is there any dissent to amending the agenda as such? Seeing no dissent, the agenda is amended. Would representatives from Black Students United who wish to start us off, please make your way to the front. And the floor is yours.
Hi, my name is Tracy Ann Celestin, and I'm a junior in the ILR School and co-chair of Black Students United. Hello, my name is Delmar Pierce. I'm class of 2019, development sociology major, and I'm co-chair of Black Students United. Silence is power. Hate speech is not free speech. We will not waste any more emotional labor than we have already lost explaining basic human rights to your assembly. Stand on the right side of history, Cornell. You will give us our time. We are reclaiming our time.
Is that?
Oh.
Is that, are you finished?
I am a season.
Okay, so does anyone else have anything that they would like to present? Do any members of the assembly have anything that they would like to say? Anna.
May I have the mic or no? Okay. I would like to ask what Black Students United would like from the assembly, in particular with regards to policy.
A point of order. We do need to use the mic all the time because this is recorded for purposes for other people can listen to it later, so that would be all right. We actually have people connected via Zoom, so if it's okay. If
I would like to ask, what particular policies Black Students United would like the University Assembly to implement, or any other requests that they have of us.
Does anyone have anything in response to that question? Oh, we have someone who'd like to come to the front.
Silence is power. Hate speech is not free speech. We will not waste any more emotional labor than we have already lost explaining basic human rights to this assembly. Stand on the right side of history, Cornell.
You will give us our time. We are reclaiming our time.
So I'd like to respond. I'd like to say.
There is someone else who.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Would you like to come to the front?
Silence is power. Hate speech is not free speech. We will not waste any more emotional labor than we have already lost explaining basic human rights to this assembly. Stand on the right side of history, Cornell. You will give us our time. We are reclaiming our time.
Jeremy?
Wasn't there someone?
I understand and respect your position. I would also ask that you at least consider, and this is entirely up to you, this is your time, the request of another person to have their voice heard.
I'm good.
You're good? Okay. So.
I think Marty.
Oh, yeah, Marty.
Yeah, I'd like the Constitutional Committee to consider the institution of a hate speech provision in the Campus Code of Conduct to look at the various legal implications of it, as in the context of the REME laws or provisions that we have to enforce in our campus code, REME being the regulations for the affecting the maintenance of the educational environment.
So I got the first part of that, but Anna?
Point of information, Marty, are you making a motion?
I'm asking that, we haven't anything on the floor yet. And so I'm just making a suggestion to the campus code, code of judicial.
Okay, so if you'd like to, is this on? All right, so if you'd like to state a formal command to the Codes and Judicial Committee, then I just need to be able to get the exact language. So I have consider instituting a hate speech provision in the Campus Code of Conduct, Campus Code of Conduct to look at, and then what was the rest of it?
Let's see. I think that our university and American universities in general can at least begin to work on the question of whether hate speech undermines the university's educational environment and therefore should be covered in the code of conduct at Cornell and JAEVL. The CJC will have to work on this so that it doesn't interfere with freedom of expression in the university environment. And that's an important part of defining the role of the university in the structuring and maintenance of a civil society. And here, a close consideration of the regulations for the maintenance of the of an academic environment is in order to the extent that hate speech affects the public order, and to the extent that the hate speech affects the public order, also the regulation of the maintenance of public order, which is also a public law issue.
Okay.
I can forward that to you.
Yeah, could you forward that to the UA listserv?
I will.
Great. Jeremy.
I would offer that we have allotted an amount of time to BSU for a presentation. If their presentation is silenced, that we allow them to continue their presentation for the time that they're allotted.
Okay, so we have...
That is a motion.
Second.
All right. Is there any dissent? All right, then we'll sit in silence for 25 minutes. Thank you. So 25 minutes has elapsed.
Motion to extend by 5 minutes.
Okay. Is there any dissent?
Thank you.
So 5 minutes.
Motion to extend by 5 minutes.
So I'm actually going to ask.
Clarification.
Motion to extend by 5 minutes.
Clarification, please.
Okay.
What are we extending?
I'm going to
silence.
I'm going to extend the presentation indefinitely until you're finished. Is that okay?
More.
I'm going to extend the presentation indefinitely until they're finished.
Is that actually a motion?
I'm making the motion. There's a second. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent.
We do have a remaining speaker on the list.
The presentation has been extended.
And our beloved allies, we really appreciate that we have reclaimed our time and we will continue to reclaim our time. If minority groups and other people are interested in organizing, please come with us to Baker 200 right now. Fight is not over, so we expect to see you all in Baker 200. No press, please.
Thank you. Thank you.
Involving our outside folks, making sure they.
Sometimes white silence is white violence. Motion in line with Marty's earlier suggestion that we direct the CJC to report to us in our next meeting on the concrete timeline for considering amending the code to address hate speech.
What information? Can you say that over?
Motion to direct the CJC to present to us at our next university assembly meeting on a specific timeline with which they will address incorporating a provision for hate speech into the code.
Second the motion.
Okay, the motion's been seconded. Okay, I'm going to restate the motion first just so I can get the exact wording down. So far, this is what I have. I have, there's been a motion to direct the CJC, which for everyone who, you know, might not know all the acronyms, is Code and Judicial Committee, to present to us at the next meeting of the University Assembly on a specific timeline in which the CJC will incorporate a provision?
An amendment to the code regarding hate speech.
An amendment to the code regarding hate speech.
Also a set of stairs
okay.
On every side.
So I'll restate the motion here so that all you members know exactly what we are, what the motion is. So there's been a motion to direct the Code of Judicial Committee to present to us at the next meeting on a specific timeline in which they will incorporate an amendment to the Campus Code of Conduct regarding hate speech.
And then I would like to motion to amend the motion after the time change and go within the fall semester.
I'm sorry, I can't hear over here. We can't hear.
Within the timeline, so after timeline, within fall semester of 2017.
Second.
Okay, so I'm going to, before you can dissent, I need to restate the motion. And for me to restate the motion, I need to have the exact wording. Yes. So we'll discuss the motion after I am able to say it completely so that the assembly is on the same page. After that, we will have an opportunity to debate the amendment to the original motion. Okay. So if you want to amend the motion to make sure that the timeline occurs within this semester in fall of 2017. Okay, so then I'll restate what Joe has proposed. There's been a motion to direct the Code of Judicial Committee to present to us at the next meeting on a specific timeline within the fall semester of 2017. That,
yes.
Within the fall semester. Sorry, I'm going to write this down just so I don't lose it. On a specific timeline within the fall semester of 2017, in which they will incorporate an amendment to the Campus Code of Conduct regarding hate speech. Okay, I'm going to restate it one more time just so that everyone's on the same page.
I'm sorry this isn't heard for me, but also just for the record. There's been a motion to direct the Cogent Judicial Committee to present to us at the next meeting on a specific timeline within the fall semester of 2017, in which they will incorporate an amendment to the campus code of conduct regarding hate speech.
Okay. I make amendment to the language.
Okay, so we are debating that amendment right now. So if anyone has anything that they would like to add regarding that amendment, then I will start taking a speaker's list.
The amendment has to do with the timeline, yes. Okay. It has to do with the fall.
Marty, you can speak here.
Okay. I'm assuming the amendment has to do with the fall to finish a addition to the code that covers hate speech. And my amendment to the language is that they develop, they consider all of the implications of hate speech legislation in the campus code.
So we need
before the end of this semester.
So we would need exact language for you to make a formal amendment.
Huh?
We would need exact language for you to make a formal amendment. So when you have your exact language down, then all right. Raise your hand and I'll recognize
you. All right.
Thanks. Next on the speaker's list is Matt, actually.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, there's a chair of the Judicial Committee. I would actually humbly request that we not confine ourselves to a timeline. The code is a very complex, and document, and I can give you a timeline, but you say we need to have something by the end of the fall, running the risk of rushing a core product.
It's been a long time.
The committee is already meeting weekly. The committee is actually looking at a code overhaul period. And I would ask, therefore, that you give the ability to have a timeline to have adequate community input and to examine fully the implications of SS changing the code. The way it's currently written is going to require an SS complete overhaul. And based off my experience serving on the committee for a number of years, I want to do this right. I would rather not rush something out the door and have rejected by the president's office or to be inadequate. Therefore, I would ask, I have no problem with the timeline, but to simply confine the committee is, in my estimation, setting us up for failure or to miss our own goal.
The committee is indeed already meeting weekly, and I know that there are a lot of changes on the agenda for the CJC to discuss. However, I will still stick with the fall timeline because I am unclear on which of those changes should be taking priority over some urgent issues.
Priority of the CJC. You meet weekly, make it meet weekly, and produce results for this assembly. There's a student who was attacked on our campus, and we need to do something immediately. I know the university assembly doesn't like to move that fast, but this is the time that we have to move fast.
I'd just like to say that historically, no timeline leads to no change.
So that is also the first speaker list. Does anyone want to speak a second time, or are there any members who haven't spoken that would like to speak?
Move the question.
Okay. There's been a motion to move the question. There has been a second. There is dissent, which means that we will have to vote on whether or not to move the question.
Mr. Goff, may I explain my dissent?
No. Just to be all clear, to move the question requires a two-thirds vote of the assembly. That's a supermajority. There are currently 18 members present.
Mr. Goff, I withdraw my motion. I withdraw my dissent.
Okay. His motion is withdrawn, which means that we will vote. Is there any other dissent to voting on this motion immediately?
The question.
on the question immediately. Okay, so if there's no dissent voting on the question, then we will vote on the following motion. There's been a motion to direct, I've been trying to write it down. There's been a motion to direct the Codes and Judicial Committee to present to us at the next meeting on a specific timeline within the fall semester, what was that? Okay, so is there any dissent to the amendment as it's currently written?
Which is the fall semester.
Which is adding in the fall semester provision. Okay, so there's no dissent, then that passes. So we'll go back into discussion on the actual, on the amended motion, which is, for everyone's reference, a motion to direct the Codes and Judicial Committee to present to us at the next meeting on a specific timeline within the fall semester of 2017, within which they will incorporate an amendment to the Campus Code of Conduct regarding hate speech. We are now, there's now a speakers list open on that question. Anna.
In the interest of allowing Dean Collins to still present to us on climate change and carbon neutrality for now, unless there's dissent, I move the question now.
Second.
Is there any dissent? All right, seeing no dissent, we will begin, but we will vote on this motion. So I'll restate it just so that everyone knows exactly what they're voting on. This requires a majority to pass. I believe there are 18 of us present, so a majority would be 10. So the motion is to direct the Codes and Judicial Committee to present to us at the next meeting on a specific timeline within the fall semester of 2017, within which they will incorporate an amendment to the Campus Code of Conduct regarding hate speech. Did I get that right? Just so that we're all, okay, great. So that's what we're voting on. And so now I'm going to ask everyone in favor of the motion to raise their placard.
What's Ulysses? Ulysses is raising his placard.
Yeah. Yeah, Ulysses is saying
I've
yes.
Got it. Where is it? There we go.
And Ulysses.
Yep.
So 18. I guess. Oh yeah, Matt Karen. So I'm sorry, there were 19 of us present. Doesn't really matter. All opposed. And anyone who'd like to abstain, the chair ordinarily abstains. By a vote of 18-0-1, the motion passes, which means that the CJC has been directed by the Assembly to present a timeline by the end of the fall semester within which they will recommend incorporating an amendment to the Campus Code of Conduct regarding hate speech. Thank you very much for introducing this motion. I guess, you know, at this point we'll move back onto the normal agenda for the day. I see Johanna's hand.
Committee reports, assembly reports, and liaison reports until next week, so as to suspend motion to table resolution 1, so as to allow Dean Collins.
Okay. Right. I'm sorry, I didn't hear the motion.
Okay, there's been a motion to, there's basically been a motion to put Dean Collins right now instead of later.
Second.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay, is there any dissent to that? Seeing no dissent, Dean Collins, thank you so much for coming. You look, yeah, he's here.
Hello, Dean Collins.
Hello, Dean Collins. Yeah,
sure. Here's the microphone.
I owe you an apology. I forgot to get the injection system set up.
No, don't worry.
I'm just going to speak.
It's okay.
Give it under the
table. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There's food. Yes. Yes. Go ahead.
So I'm just going to get started. So I'd like to thank the University Assembly for asking me to come forward and talk a little bit about the work that's been going on under a group called the Senior Leaders Climate Action Group. Let me place this in a little bit of context. So as you know, President Swarton made a commitment that the university should achieve climate neutrality, which is to say that we're not producing any carbon and running a research fund institution, so a very, very challenging goal. Originally, that goal was set for the year 2050. That date has been moved up to 2035. President Garrett then came along and commissioned this group, the Senior Leaders Climate Action Group. And it's a very unusual one in the country in that it represents a collaboration between two units that you never see collaborating in the world, and I think it gives us some chance of being successful. So I'm the Dean of Engineering, and so an academic unit, and I'm working very closely with Rick, what is now Rick Burgess, who's the Vice President for Infrastructure, Properties, and Planning. It's unusual to see a collaboration at any institution between essentially a facilities vice president and an academic unit, in this case of engineering, but I think that that's exactly what's required in order to achieve a very ambitious goal. Provost Kalinkoff then, in March of 2016, came to the group and challenged us to think about multiple ways in which we could achieve this goal. This goal was so ambitious. He was concerned that we had locked ourselves into a single approach and wanted us to give him options. That led to a report that came out in October 2016, which is online. It's the options, several options report, options for ways for Cornell to achieve carbon neutrality, that was co-authored by the Senior Leader Climate Action. So since then, and really what I'm reporting on now is in some ways how we're moving forward on the various activities that were recommended in that report. For those of you that are very interested in this topic, I highly recommend that you read that report. It really lays out in some ways as well. So what's important in that report to understand is that there are two elements to achieving climate neutrality. One is that we want to lower the supply and the side. So on the demand side, we have already been leaders in the country in the sense that the university, the building space has grown in the last 20 years by about 20%, and yet the energy that we consume hasn't changed. So the energy on a per square foot basis has gone down. That's an important element of this, reducing demand. And there are all kinds of ways in which we do that, large and small, all the way from individual behaviors that have to do with just turning off the lights or unplugging your computer during breaks and so forth. And it has actually substantial impacts on the energy use, all the way up to the way that we go about designing buildings and using modern materials and modern technology to reduce the energy that we use. So it's reduced the demand, and on the other side, the demand literally zero is to change the way in which we produce energy in order to avoid the use of carbon. So the report talks about nine priorities, and I'm just going to go through those nine priorities because I'd like to leave some time for discussion after it. So I'm not going to go into incredible depth on each of the nine, but I'll give you a feel. Okay. The first one is really about education. It's called campus engagement, and it's really setting the goal for the entire citizenry of Cornell to be aware of what climate change is and to make thoughtful decisions about the resources that we use, that we consume, and ways in which we reduce our emissions collectively. So when we think about this, this is the entire Cornell community. So we're thinking about all of the students, undergraduate, graduate students. We're thinking about all of the staff and all of the faculty. And that's a complex group of people in which to enact such a relatively ambitious charge. And so what does this mean? It means that we need to look at our curriculum, and the ways in which we look at it is there's this notion of literacies, that these are things that every student should leave the campus with. And so we're proposing this idea, and it's been it's under discussion, I guess, where I put it right now, that we think of climate sophistication and understanding of how we are impacting the climate as one of those literacies. And then how that has curricular implications that then have to be developed across the entire university. With respect to staff, many of you may recognize there was a program called that's been going on, Cornell's Think Big, Live Green, which has been a challenge in some sense in which colleges have challenged each of the occupants of different buildings to reduce the energy footprint of their building, and then each tries to do it to a greater extent than the others, and there's a sort of fun aspect of it, and a friendly challenge associated with it. And there are aspects that are associated with faculty, which the faculty things have to work through the faculty senate. And so so this broad charge is being led by Mike Hoffman, who is a professor in entomology and has been active in this area. And he is developing, in some sense, the program. It's still at a fairly early stage. And I'll say a little bit at the end about how the senior leader climate action group is continuing to work with these. So that's priority one. Priority two is to look at efficient buildings. And so we spend a lot of money and we do a lot of time and energy in developing in renovating existing buildings and building new buildings. For the most part, Cornell has been very focused on renovation. And the ways that we go about that impact the footprint of development. And we're looking at the process to encourage ways in which we might spend money up front to ultimately reduce the carbon footprint of the building. It's challenging because oftentimes you worry about the bottom line right up front, and that puts pressure on you to reduce the reductions, if you like, to take away the savings that you might have. And we're looking at ways in which we can relieve that sort of tension up front by taking advantage of the savings that are accrued, maybe over 15 or 20 years. And so that's a whole strategy that has to happen with respect to the way that we go about commissioning renovation projects. Number three is looking at how we work with offsets. And so it's likely that we will not be able to drive carbon completely to zero. There's certain elements of transportation, for example, that we have to be able to go to zero. And so one of the ways that we can accomplish carbon neutrality is that there will be offsets, the ways in which we're reducing carbon in other ways to offset the carbon that we are producing. And this is something that, for example, is impacted by the way that we go about managing our forests. So this is land that Cornell owns. And there are people wise in the ways of this that are looking at ways in which we can maximize those carbon offsets. This particular initiative is being led by Bob Howard. So another is we look at what we're calling our green gas inventory. So this is now looking at and communicating. Now, one of the things we identified in this options report is that it's not only the gas that we consume and put into the atmosphere, but it's all of the leakage that occurs upstream. And in fact, that leakage can be quite detrimental to the environment because natural gas, methane, is actually a stronger global warming gas than carbon dioxide. So you have to take that into consideration. And so there's one of our staff members, Bert Land, who's looking at ways of inventorying that upstream leakage so that we are considering that in as part of the challenge in going to climate neutrality. Number five is now a source, electricity. And of course, we've got to power the campus. So we have to move from the combined heat power plant, which produces the electricity, much of the electricity on the campus, and purchasing the rest of it from sources that involve carbon, to renewable sources of energy. So largely, this has been looking at photovoltaic cells. You know, there have been a number that have been installed on the campus. We're continuing to install new ones. And there's one, there's a project in that sort of the Dryden area that we're looking to implement in the near future. These often involve power purchase agreements. They're complex. There's community aspects to it. You know, there's always a little envy with projects of this sort. So the person, Sarah Zanatic, has been working on that this little project and has made good progress towards installing, I think, what will be our fourth photovoltaic farm. Number, the priority six is heat. So this is actually mine. So this is, if those didn't know, we're looking at a new source to heat the campus again, combine heat power with turning natural gas. We want to remove that as a source and replace it with deep geothermal energy. So this is digging deep enough into the earth so you get to high enough temperatures that you can heat water to a temperature hot enough that it can serve as a source of heat for the entire campus. That's a very, very complex project in the sense that it involves literally research in the college combined with the implementation that the facilities people can do. So this is, again, this, we call it the living laboratory, but the campus in some sense is a laboratory, not only in the sense of implementing new technology, but in fact developing the technology we are implementing. So it's a combined activity. Seven is transportation. So this is an area that's being led by Todd Cowan, who's and Oliver Gow, both are professors in civil and environmental engineering. Transportation accounts for about a quarter of our carbon footprint, so it's not a trivial source. It is complex because it involves multiple vehicles coming from all different directions and distances. And the question of whether and how we might go to modify transportation systems, multi-mode transportation systems, that would provide ways in which people can get onto the campus with either zero or reduced carbon footprints. So for example, we can look at the bus system, the TFAT bus system, and ask, are there ways that we might electrify it? That's one of the possibilities. Going to biodiesel is another, and we're examining and exploring those as different options. Number eight was the committee wanted to advocate that we ensure that climate action sustainability is included in the university's strategic plan. And so David Lodge, who is the director of the Atkinson Center for Sustainable Future, took that challenge on. It turns out we're not actually developing a brand new strategic plan. So in a sense, the point is moot. But what we see going forward is there are sort of two elements of this. So there is something called, the provost has spoken about, radical collaboration. You've heard about this, but this is really taking advantage of Cornell's natural collaborative place. This is maybe more collaborative than any place I'm aware of. And saying, are there problems, you know, societal problems that we can impact as a consequence of that nature that we have? In this case, one of those seven areas that have been identified is sustainability. So one element of this is they'll be hiring, as a consequence of that, a faculty whose expertise lies in the broad areas of sustainability across the entire campus. And he's been leading that particular effort. And then the second half of that is this group that I'm describing, Senior Leaders Climate Action Group, which is more of the operational side of things. It's looking at actually making changes on the campus. And so we think that combined effort effectively means that sustainability is very much front and center of the university's thought and planning. And then number nine is one that is, we can call it funding alternatives, but in some ways we need to look at ways in which we can design funds that will allow us to accomplish these goals. These goals involve, in some ways, are really higher goals. We call it a quadruple bottom line, which we're looking at more than just the bottom line, the financial bottom line, but actually looking at universities in terms of being a leader, looking at the people that are on the campus, and so forth. That said, you still need funds in order to make projects happen, and so we want to look at creative ways in which we can design funds for each of those eight other priorities to allow those priorities to move forward. That's a high-level summary. As I mentioned, it talks to both the demand side of the problem and the supply side of the problem. Our goal is still 2035, which is ambitious. It's very, it means that we are actively working on each of those projects. And then I'll just say one more thing. The Senior Leader Climate Action Group is currently sitting in an advisory capacity to help each of those priorities to move it forward. Because what often happens is that the leadership of those priorities is active and engaged in trying to get something to happen that runs as a roadblock. And what we see, what's important about our group is that our group is in a position in which we have people like Paul Streeter, who's the vice president for budget, who we can talk to directly to try to look for solutions to those particular problems. So we're serving in this advisory capacity. We just sat with each of the nine, which is a funding issue, priorities to hear updates on where they are. They're all making progress to varying degrees, and we're there trying to assist them in moving forward. So I think there is a good place for me to stop, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
So I have Anna, Matt, and then Marty. And Linda. Here.
This one's dead.
I think with the last amount of people there, we might just be able to speak normally.
No,
it's
you, please.
Oh, okay.
Never mind. Need to hear the rest of you, but Dean Collins, can I ask you to hang on to that one so you can reply? Hello. Mm-hmm.
It goes on and on.
Lovely. Okay. Thank you so much for coming to present to us and for being very patient with our last meeting. We really appreciate it. I have a couple of questions. You've mentioned in your presentation creative ways to design funds, and it seems like there's quite a lot going on here. Is the university providing adequate financial and personnel support for each of these components?
So this is longer than a half-hour conversation, so I'm going to do my best by using a couple of examples. So the project that I'm working on, Earth Source Heat, is a very, very expensive project. And so to answer the short answer to your question is no, we do not have the funding to just perform that total upgrade. But what's interesting about it is that it's new technology, and so we will be able to draw from private funds, from state government, from the federal government, from foundations to find that funding. So instead of me having a very short top line that says, yes, Cornell has provided the funding, I have a more complex response that says, yes, Cornell has activated me and others to raise the funding to make this happen. And that's the reality. It's just there's no way the institution could afford to do this on its own. What's interesting is Cornell is probably the only school in the country that's even capable of trying to develop this technology. So that brings industry to the table. And so I'm actually quite confident that if we're successful, that we will continue to be able to draw those funds. So it's not a concern, but it's not a simple I'm going to talk about one other as an example is the buildings, because that's another high ticket item that we spend a lot of money on buildings. What we're looking at are creative ways in which there may be a fund created up front to allow us to engineer the most efficient building we can. And then the savings in energy that comes out of that would then be used to replenish the fund. So these are the kind of creative, so that's why there's not a simple answer, but what I would say is I'm confident that each of the areas are moving forward. And I feel that the senior leader, I mean, we should be accountable to ensuring that that's the case.
Thanks. So is this the only mic that works besides?
Yes.
All right, that's awkward. So Matt's next, I'm gonna pass this over.
Thank you. Is this on? Can you hear me?
Yeah, you guys speak into it.
Okay, good. I just wanted to thank you. Actually, I was on the assembly back when we were working to get the flag out running. See if it's cutting in and out. But anyways, just wanted to thank you. And I'm just curious in terms of seeing the technologies that have been deployed at Cornell Tech as that's come online, such as the house being carbon being passive environmentally, as well as the other technologies, wondering how those are going to be filtered back to the Ithaca campus or possibly even out to Cornell's other campuses in New York City, Geneva, or Qatar.
So that's a great question. So as you all know, Cornell Tech just opened its spectacular campus if you haven't seen it. And so the Bloomberg building is net zero, so that is producing as much energy as it consumes. It's using photovoltaics on the top. There's a beautiful canopy of photovoltaics, and it's also using geothermal. But that's relatively shallow geothermal, which is really a heat pump, which means you're really using electricity to heat the building. So what I would say is very much we are drawing off of the lessons learned from that particular construction. That said, some of what we're doing here is even further beyond what was done in Roosevelt. So in a way, it's exciting. This is real new. This is brand new technology. Going as deep as we would have to go and doing it on the East Coast, if we're successful, it really opens the door for geothermal energy to be used anywhere in the world. As it currently stands, geothermal is really restricted, not the shallow heat pump version, that can be anywhere, but that's not as green because you're actually still using electric energy to do the heating. But in the case where you're really going deep enough where you're able to produce either electricity or heat, is restricted to places like Iceland, which is not a volcano, or the West Coast, which is an active area, tectonically active area. What this would do is it would essentially open it up to the whole world. So that's why it's an interesting technology, and that's why industry is knocking at the door, because they all are always looking for new sources of energy.
Thank you. Am I? Or who's next?
So I actually had a question that I wanted to ask. One of my questions has to do with kind of the trade-off between Earth source heat and essentially working on the other issues in reaching carbon neutrality. So I guess my question is, how is the SCLAG going to balance? Like how are you going to make sure that you emphasize working on achieving carbon neutrality through other mechanisms besides, you know, deeper Earth sources? Because from what I understand, there's a probability that those might not actually work out. So that was my question. And then Marty, you go. Thank you.
So I want to be clear. Everything we do, so if I take a building, I reduce the energy load from that building. If I've saved a watt from that building, that's equivalent to reducing it remotely. So everything we do to reduce energy, it's just as important as everything we do to produce it in a different way. So I want to make sure that, so all of the demand side work is just as important. And what's interesting about it is it's around behavior. It's around thinking about how we go about doing things. So it's something that we can activate very quickly. And in some ways, the whole community can feel as though they're making their small contribution to Cornell achieving this massive. So I just think that's extraordinarily important. We want to make sure that we're really clear. So all, you know, there are many of the priorities that I just mentioned that are really around the demand side, and I think we will be very active. And what we've done is we've put somebody in charge of each of those who we will keep accountable to make sure that they're making progress. So that's to answer your particular question. Now, the risk side of Earth source heat is very real, and what we've done to manage that risk is to do it in a staged way. So we're going to do four stages. Each of the stages, if we are unable to achieve a stage, we won't go on. And so we manage the risks because the initial stages are less expensive. If we have success, then there's that risk comes down and we will be able to bring more investment. People are not necessarily going to invest in the beginning, so we're relying pretty heavily on philanthropy up front. But as we demonstrate success, we'll move forward. And if we don't demonstrate success, we'll move on. So that's basically the plan.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've been engaged in this on both the local level and more broadly. On the local level, I'm connected with driving the effort and faced the sort of dynamics of that. And I want to focus in this on the point you raised first off, which is education. Because what seems to be missing in this drive dynamic, let's say, is that the society as a whole is not yet in the same boat. That is, we can say sustainability here, but it doesn't translate yet into what do you mean by sustainability? I'm doing all right. It's a beautiful day outside, kind of thing. Or, you know, what do you mean by sustainability? I love this place the way it is. I can't change it in any way to try and cut my carbon neutrality in any way. what I do doesn't matter because the whole world is, you know, some of the world is working for it, but a lot of this country, other people are not. Now, my point in saying this is that education is key in this because we're an educational institution. And so it seems to me like this could be, if Cornell's a living laboratory, if it's also taking this on as a committed cause, even if the rest of the region or state or nation hasn't yet got the message or is working towards getting the message, then it might be that there's a major initiative necessary to make it a real centerpiece of Cornell, not just another thing that the trustees have offered, but a centerpiece of what we do. And that is, we are a living laboratory because if our experiments don't work, then the country is in trouble. The world is in trouble. Okay. That's all I had to say. But I just wanted to ask about the educational components.
Sorry, we're running very low on time.
Okay.
So I just want to make sure everyone gets a chance to speak. Anna, did you have a motion?
To extend the meeting by 10 minutes with Dean Collins' permission to allow 5 more for questions, if you can say, and then another 5 minutes to quickly go over the CJC's UHRB appointments resolution, and then table everything else until the next meeting.
So that was, I didn't get all the words there.
We got it.
We got it.
Okay. Extend the meeting by 5 minutes. Great. So we've extended the meeting by 10 minutes, and 5 of those minutes are going to be so that Dean Collins has time to finish up here, and we have time to get through some of our resolutions. Next up is Linda.
It's okay.
It's a community effort.
Yes. We're a team.
Hello, as you know, last year we passed a resolution endorsing your plan and requesting that someone come and speak with us. So thank you very much for updating us. We do appreciate it. One of the things you mentioned was that in lieu of the strategic planning process, so we're looking at these radical collaborations, which I think is wonderful, but I don't think it substitutes for strategic planning. And as Mario was saying, this is going to take a lot of resources, a lot of will, and there are PA priorities, namely Cornell Tech. I think there's a lot going on. And so I'm wondering, is there any way that the university assemblies can support climate action through, I've actually drafted a resolution calling upon the university administration to draft a strategic plan and to include climate action and many of the other things that are going on here. So I'm wondering, from your perspective, what resources do you need? What can we do to support this effort?
So I understand your perspective. I guess the way I'm looking at this is this committee, this committee that I co-chair, has that responsibility. So it structurally may not be ideal way that you're suggesting, but I don't, from an operational standpoint, I think the oversight is in place. And the approach that we're taking is we've carved out these 9 priorities, and there are people in charge of those priorities. And perhaps adding visibility to this is really what you're saying. It's kind of happening out there, but you don't know what's happening. It reminds me, there is a need to improve communications. There's actually an enormous amount of it's just locked up in a zillion websites that are arcane at best to come through. And one of the things that we're looking at is, can we get a web design, sort of redesign of all of those documents? They're just literally hundreds of documents that talk to various aspects of sustainability. And I think that there seems to be a sense of there's silence and that we need to break the silence. The reality is there's a ton of things going on constantly. It's just you don't know that they're there. And that is a, in the grand scheme of things, a fairly minor issue, but it's an important one. Minor in the sense that it's not terribly expensive to redesign. But I think that if you actually knew all that was going on, you'd feel more comforted that the institution's really behind this. As far as drafting a resolution saying that we would want to hear from the senior leadership that it continues to consider this a priority as a presidential change, I think it's reasonable to ask the senior leadership to provide that sort of input or to the body. I don't know if asking them to do a strategic plan is going to be necessarily in the cards, because that's not currently the way that
I just have a quick note to that.
Marty, we're running very low on time.
At the campus planning committee, we discussed revising the strategic plan with this in mind.
All
right. That's all
okay.
I wanted to say.
Okay. Thank you. I think that the office wants me to have it back so that I speak into it. Okay. So that exhausts questions from members of the assembly. We ran out of time. It seemed like you had something that you wanted to ask. Could you make it very, very brief?
I have something
okay.
more to share.
Is it a question?
It's like a question / comment. That's very important.
Okay.
So my name is Brandon. I'm a first year here. I'm living up on North Campus, and I've noticed that one of the big issues that you guys have just touched on is education on campus, and I'm glad. Like, I think there's a huge disconnect, and I think I'm addressing this to both the panel and you. This information about environmental issues is not being disseminated properly in the student classes at all. Not mentioned in orientation, not mentioned in any of our RA meetings, not mentioned in OHL meeting. And really, like, kids are not trained to focus on the issue here. There's big discrepancies even in like our buildings. Recycling cans are a third of the size of the garbage cans, and this is just promoting the mindset. There's many other issues, but I just want to make this apparent to both of you guys and
thank
you. Know what you guys are hearing about.
So that's great. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. I guess what I'd say is things are just we're not at the end where we begin, but it's important that this entire community feel like it's part of it. So I applaud you for bringing it up to me. I also feel, so I'm going to transmit this to my confidant who's in charge of that educational component. But what you're saying is orientation is another opportunity, maybe we didn't think about that and so forth. So I guess what I'm saying is continue to be vigilant and to push for what you're pushing on, because you want the same thing. It's just that this is a huge institution, and so we have to look at an element of it that you have. So we're wanting to encourage that. Absolutely.
Great. Thanks so much, Dean Collins, for having us. Thank you. All right, so we'll move into business of the day, resolution number one, appointment of University Hearing Board and University Review Board members for academic year 2017-2018. Matt, if you want to just pull that table back a little bit so that it's kind of more in line with the
R.
Yeah. And then we're going to need a motion to extend the meeting. Yeah. So there's been a motion to extend the meeting by 10 minutes. There's been a second. Is there any dissent to extending the meeting by 10 minutes? Seeing no dissent, the meeting's been extended to 10 minutes. Matt, you have the floor.
Okay, and my microphone is...
Test. Yeah, you got the working one.
I will test one.
There you go.
Okay, there you go. So first off, thank you. This is this resolution confirming the remaining members of the University Review Boards. A number of the members were given an emergency for these temporary appointments by the University's Southern Executive Committee to serve for the duration of the summer. A few others are filling vacancies with resignations over the summer, or members from the dean of faculty who need to still be confirmed by the UA or are not actually confirmed, are not handled through the CJC. I actually also want to take a moment to thank my last year committee for the incredible amount of time and dedication they placed into this. As you know, they are all volunteers. This resolution is handling UARB. Well over 100 hours, and at least double that in terms of my time, so I'm very proud of you and happy to say very well done. We were able to handle that last year, and this resolution is roughly self-explanatory. explanatory, and I'd have to answer any questions.
Okay, great. Thanks. Are there any questions for Matt regarding this resolution?
Motion to call a question.
Second. So, yeah, Matt, would you like to state your dissent?
I would like to say that it's the traditional policy of the university assembly. I think actually in our bylaws that we do not vote on matters prior matters that need to be introduced, provide much time for community feedback and comment. Right. But this is even more important because in theory, if someone to come forward and say, I believe John Doe or Jane Doe is unfit to serve,
fair enough.
Therefore I request that we do not vote today.
Fair enough, I withdraw.
Anna?
Motion to table the resolution until the next meeting.
There's been a motion to table. Is there a second? There's been a second. Is there any dissent to tabling the motion? Seeing no dissent, the table the resolution. Seeing no dissent, the resolution has been tabled.
Motion to adjourn.
No.
Okay. Well, there's been a motion to adjourn. Is there a second? Seeing no second, the motion is not, the meeting will not be adjourned and we'll continue on with the agenda.
We move
over
to next week, so
now we're all right, Kevin, what's...
So if everything has been so messed up with everything, I just want to, make a statement. Again, Matt Sibley. Can I understand what we did for the CDC? Fully support what we did. What I am concerned with is what these guys have been doing and stuff, and we need to put what happened today up on top. Is there a way that we can support them? I'm not up for anything like that, but to give them support to get this taken care of.
So, yeah, I'll recognize your name right after. So, as far as I can tell, in the bylaws of the assembly, committees are allowed to convene subcommittees at the discretion of the chair. And so if the committee wants to convene a subcommittee to specifically investigate this, that is, you know, that's within the committee's purview. Additionally, you know, the composition of the subcommittee, it could have members of the committee on it. I don't think it necessarily has to. But as far as I can tell, that's what I know about what you seem to have asked.
I mean, would it help, Matt, to...
just in terms of in general, the CDC, we are as a board, we volunteers, we move to a weekly schedule. The reason I actually had a concern about our ability to provide a product by the end of the semester is because I am legitimately concerned that, I mean, if you want a product tomorrow by the semester, I will move hell and high water to get you one. The concern is realistically we need to maybe do a deep dive. And I can shuffle our agenda entirely. That being said, we do have one matter that is actually an incredible urgency that we will handle this. Not yet completion. You will handle that. But realistically it's just a matter of sitting in a room and hammering out how to do this. The fact that we need, how do you define free speech? How does it interact with the numerous free speech expression protocols? What is the input of the faculty? What is the input of the students? What is the input of the graduates? It's a lot of legwork. And we are equipped to do it. It's just it's a very aggressive timeline. Code changes of this magnitude traditionally take months to a year, 2 to 8 years to pass. And as I said, we will get our utmost effort, and I am on board with that. But the reason I raise it again is I am concerned that if you do it, we'll get a product that is not good enough that President Pollock might not accept it. But as I said, I'm so been ordered by assembly, I will make the board working with the committee of it and we will report.
So you don't mean
The only assistance we ever need is generally logistical in terms of ordering food, setting up meetings, so they have room to printing. The office assembly is fantastic, and they're on top of that. I know they've been busy, but we're working with them for going on 5 years now. They've always been fantastic support. So, realistically, it's just the time of my members, and I've convinced most of them to buy in weekly meetings, and we want to move forward. But at this point, I'm concerned that adding more people simply adding 20 people to the kitchen.
Yeah, I understand that. I'm sorry, Keith, but it just seems like. One of the things that we need is some of the people that are involved really need to be part of this, or else we're not really going to get the meat of it. So that's why I'm just asking, is there a way that that we should get more involved in.
So
going to have a personal privilege,
yeah.
This is can't hear after this.
Is that new that you can't hear things, or is that a
well, when we're speaking to the microphones, we can hear.
Okay, so here's what I'm going to do. So, Kevin, I'm going to put you on the second speakers list, so that after everyone's got a chance to speak once, that you can ask more questions. So on the first speakers list, we have Joseph. And Joseph is going to get my microphone. Okay.
Jeremy, can you become the designated mic person?
So, I don't want to echo what you were about to say next, was, you know, including that in the process. Because, I mean, look around, everyone, we're not that diverse here. And they don't, particularly undergraduates in these marginalized communities, don't have a lot of trust with inside the university center to do our job. And that's just a fact. It was, you know, myself and Naj are the only two undergraduates here that are directly listed from our population. Like, they literally vote for us, and I have to campaign. And every time, like, I walk in, they go, what's the university assembly? Like, this is the first time they've ever interacted with us, and I do, you know, think that is a problem. So I will be doing my best to engage with all of them, and make sure there are. I look forward to Matt and I work together to make sure I have those undergraduate perspectives, and I'm relaying that as best as possible. And I know Matt has taken meetings with several undergraduates already, so I just want to communicate with that, especially.
Yeah, so Jeremy's going to be the designated mic passer because of our... you can respond.
I appreciate you raising that. As a matter of fact, actually, you've heard me hold the seat that I held for 2 years when I was actually the vice chair of Charlotte Assembly. In terms of, our meetings are open, the agendas are public. Actually, I work from the office to get a picture. Our info list is operational. We're happy to engage with anyone. That being said, the CJC traditionally is a committee of subject matter experts. The code is very, as it's written right now, it's written like a legal document. And the people who have been on it for a long time, primarily to need that expertise to understand how to align. And the next report is a bit of a Herculean task, so we're happy to engage, and I anticipate engaging quite heavily. There is the logistical and practical aspect of to come in. I mean, right now, we could be assembly could on the floor amend and do as they saw with the code. I would strongly against that because there are so many moving parts that to figure out how to isolate this correctly and to be able to do something that's actually workable and also that we've accepted by the president requires, frankly, requires people who have been around the block. That being said, we do need input from this community considering the fact that they showed up in force. I think it's safe to say that they're concerned and the force is concerned. So thank you.
So I'm gonna quick motion that since we're past time again, I'm gonna motion that we go ahead and do it.
You still got 5 minutes.
No, we have four minutes.
Okay. I'm gonna continue the motion anyway. I'm gonna move that we move into executive session just so we can continue having this conversation for as long as people are able. If you need to go, we can go. But let's move to executive session.
There's been opposition.
Okay, there's been a second. So we'll now move into debate on the motion to move into executive session. Anna, you're first on the speaker's list.
Microphone. This seems like something we can continue the discussion of next meeting as CJC gives us a timeline. If that's not the case, I am going to rescind my objection.
My thought is that while that is true, I also leave some space for those who do wish to remain and continue speaking about it have that. But if we go into executive session and stop the recording, we have folks from the OE can go home. But we can continue having that conversation here.
Okay, so does anybody else want to be on the speakers list regarding the motion to move into executive session? If not, then I'm going to ask the assembly to move the question so that we can vote on whether or not to go into executive session. Is there any dissent to vote it? Okay, seeing no dissent, as this is an amendment of the agenda, it'll require a 2/3 vote to pass. So all in favor of moving into executive session immediately, please raise your hand or placard. All opposed. Okay, the chair abstains.
by a vote of 13-3-1. That is two-thirds. Yeah, that's two-thirds. We'll move into executive session. Thank you so much to the Office of the Assemblies for all the help you provided for this special meeting. We really appreciate it. So, I don't know.
The problem, Ulysses is on Pam's computer.
Oh. Yeah, just call it. Just call it.
I'll use my phone, don't worry.
Yeah, just call it. All right, guys, let's take 2 minutes and then reconvene in the executive session.
This name thing straight.
Yeah, we're gonna get so that. So that I'm not sitting up there with I know.
You're opposed to it. You're opposed.
We've gone so late. We've gone so late that I am concerned about impinging on time, and we don't have everyone present. And then just it does seem like the sort of thing we can postpone until we have
a request. I need a name tag.
Oh, I'm not opposed to have. Do you have any name tag? No.
Okay. Who do I see about that?
Is it you? You see Gina about that in the back.
Okay.
Sorry.
that's what I voted with you.
Oh my God. I was planning on some extra time today, so I'm gonna handle that.
No, I didn't.
Yeah. Wait, who put up?
Is this still on?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. He is.
Can you bring it back to Gina?
Okay. We have 3% battery.
Okay.
I'm just gonna use my phone if that's like a doesn't matter to me.
We think we can maybe find a charger.
If Pam needs her laptop back, because I'm assuming she needs her laptop.
Yeah, but apparently we're returning that later.
You got it.
It's
all good. I'm taking responsibility for the technology.
Never mind. I'm not sure why we're going into executive session at the end of the
day. I can't even hear you with everything. I'm sorry. People are talking all around.
I was like, is
this
really
what
I
was probably the right answer was to actually
try.
Yeah, that's what
okay.
The white motion might have been through pure in a minute.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I want to go home at some point tonight. This is important enough.
Yeah, that's what I do on my birthday.
Yeah.
On Tuesday, but it's so.
People coming over at 7, but
yeah.
Nate can host.
I'll just be here.
Yeah, I don't know. This whole thing is weird.
There's better things to do. I don't see the
I can't hear you. Sorry? Executive session, sorry. We're closing the room for executive session.
I just wanted to give you a
Oh, yeah, no worries. You know, you can just always go.
Okay, people, request from Ulysses, if we are going into executive session, can we please sit down so we can get started? Some of us are doing our jobs still.
Yep.
I'm ready.
Matt and Alec.
Yeah.
Matt and Alec, can we please sit down so that some of us can go home?
All right, we might lose four. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We want a quorum. If you leave.
You need to stay for quorum. That's the game.
What are you going to get?
A meeting with one piece for a piece that which one?
What time?
Okay, everyone, let's sit down and do this now.
You need
four.
All right. So we basically lost eight of the people who were here. Oh wait, no, we have Ulysses. So we'll have quorum. No, we're not using the mic because it doesn't need to be recorded.
Yeah, but Ulysses can't hear.
I can hear. I actually can hear pretty fine.
You can hear?
I can hear you all just fine. I just kind of want this to keep moving because I'm still on the clock. So.
Oh, all right. Jeremy called the executive session, so I'm going to turn the floor over to him.
Okay. In the recent executive session, there seemed like there was a lot of conversation left regarding the directions of the CJC. I think it allowed time for folks to actually express those that we were past time. So can we start a speakers list for folks that want to continue that conversation?
I think we have some already. That was
okay.
Are you?
Jeremy, I think you're next on the list here.
I'd already spoken my part.
Just so we know, Gina is here.
Okay.
Yeah. Until.
So, okay. Morgan, I think you were next on the speakers list.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good that.
I'm sorry. Do you need this room? Is there a meeting here? We have to have this as a private meeting right now. I'm sorry.
Thank you. All right, Marty, you have the floor.
When I made the proposal that there be a consideration of hate speech to be added to the code, I did so understanding that there's, having read a good deal about hate speech legislation, one could say, in countries around the world, in the United States, and even in universities. And I know that it's a complicated issue, a very complicated issue, because it's a matter that the Supreme Court has ruled on as far as public law is concerned. And I specifically embedded that in the idea of the component of the code that has to do with remedy the educational environment. Because as you can see, hate speech is very fracturing for the educational environment. Public order it is too, but it's only when it becomes criminal.
Thank
hate,
you.
Hate crime, and hate speech is not a hate crime. It's just not. It's just not defined that way. And even if we said it was a hate crime if we want to use the word crime in the way that it's used around the country, then we have to say that hate speech is not a hate crime, but it is. Fracturing of the educational environment. So So my point in saying all this is that I'm perfectly in agreement with having a timetable for the Heads and Dish Committee to put together or consider this. I expect that the Heads and Dish Committee, you know, however it wants to do it, it's going to have to deal with the question of how do we put anything into the code that is legally enforceable. Now, whenever we bring this up, Matt says, well, the president won't accept it. I think that it's worth a test if the Codes and Judicial Committee can come up with something that seems feasible. But frankly, given how the code is processed, because before it goes to the president, it goes to the legal division of the university. And the lawyers in the university are going to look at this and they're going to say, we can do this, we can't do that. So the Codes and Judicial Committee put a test forward. And I think, you know, in a short period of time, you could try it. And then it's up to the university as a whole, including us, to inform people with language rather than silence that it can or it can't be done in the context of the code. And I think it's a wonderful experience that we had today. And I appreciated the opportunity to meditate and to think about it and to read some signs. And one of the signs that was very important to me, I feel like I have to say this, and I'm sorry, that was prominent, was I came here to learn. I came here to learn. And frankly, I think this is a great opportunity to learn. What you're going to learn is what the Supreme Court has said, is what the, and I don't mean this in any pejorative way. I mean, somebody has to learn that. And somebody has to learn that some of the descriptions, you know, you have to learn, people have to learn that when you say in your dispatch that the code is a creation of the university assembly, or that it was, you know, myself and other people that created the code, in fact, you know, you have to learn that's not the history, but that's a small point. And you have to learn things. This is coming from the statement that precipitated the meeting. It's a key instrument in protecting white supremacists from receiving consequences for using hate speech. One has to learn whether it is that or not. And I think this is an opportunity to clarify some of those things. Now, I agree that having somebody who is serious about listening and learning to join with, at least as an observer, in all the deliberations about this would be very useful. I don't think it would be helpful if the person who joined from Black Students United or from any group that is concerned about this would come and just say, oh, you're wrong, without learning the things. There's lots written about this. Now, we can say, oh, writing is ridiculous, speaking is ridiculous, we want to be silent. You know, I mean, I've learned my lesson about that. I think right now we have to do some learning that involves talking to each other, that involves reading things, that involves thinking about stuff. If we came here to learn, then let's do that.
Yeah, Jeremy, you're next anyways. So.
Okay, so a couple of things I'm going to try to request. The first is that Marty's right, that it is a very difficult question. It seems relatively simple. And I thought it was too. I've done a lot of research, and most of it has honestly been over the last 3 days. I'm not a professional at this. Codes have been tried at other universities before. There's been significant abuse of them, but it's actually harmed the exact people that we're trying to protect. So I understand Matt's encouragement to be careful. I also understand the desire for something better than what we have now being put in place, and I agree with that. There is a line that we need to draw between free speech and hate speech, and it's never going to be a perfect line. We do need something that's better than today. I it is a tight timeline to try to place that line so that we're not going to harm the people that we're trying to protect. But we're going to give it every effort. Having said that, our meetings have always been open meetings, correct? So you are welcome to come in and sit in. However, given the, I'm on this adjacent, by the way, given that extremely tight timeline, we may have to be very restrictive and protective of that time because it is no joke a difficult question to answer and going to be difficult to implement properly within the time frame there.
Yeah, and before we move on, and this is, I guess, something that I probably should have said a while ago, maybe in public session, I actually do want to point out that the CJC has been meeting every week, and that, like, it's doubled its meeting times, and I just want to applaud Matt for taking the initiative on so many things that have gotten stalled for so long, and so thank you, Matt, because I don't know how the UA could, I really don't get how the UA would be able to move forward on any code changes without your service. So I wanted to say that personally. I hope that the assembly agrees. Next is Anna.
One is a question, which is I want us to be clear about what precisely we want before we close executive session. I am a little unclear on it. And I do want to express my discomfort with being in a closed executive session when we just had such a large amount of public interest. I think this could backfire very badly on us.
That was number two.
Oh, that was on a different list. Yeah, okay, here. Kevin, you're up now.
Me too.
Ulysses.
Oh, Ulysses wants to be up?
Yes,
okay.
At some point.
Yeah. So Kevin, then Ulysses.
Cool.
And then you're after you. All right, come on.
So
I want to leave
here. Right now, this to me is the best opportunity. I'm not saying they have a committee, you know, ad hoc or whatever. What I'm asking for is to include people that were here. That's all. This is, to me, is not just, you know, CJC and codes. This is actually part of the team. And I really think that they were here to be heard. And I still say that there needs to be some involvement in them to be able to feel included in making this change. That's all I'm saying. Even if it's just to go through and you make your things to review it with them or whatever. I mean, your CJC meetings, there isn't a lot of space where you guys meet. And I can guarantee you that you're going to get a full house because they do know that it's going to be. And what I'm just hoping is that it doesn't clog you up in getting your job done. But trying to get them excluded in a certain part of the process, I think is very beneficial. And that's what I'd like to see, is to see them involved. And I mean, you got a lot of them. And you're gonna have a lot more because they do know that we put up a resolution to give you a date and time. So I'm just saying is that if there is a way that you can include the BSU or you know, whatever, I think it's just a good thing. And I hope you take part and take a look at that because they are important, they feel that they're not appropriate. And I have a feeling what's going to happen is they know they're not going to be heard. So if we drag this on, that's why I think you need to act fast, act smartly, and have that in mind. That's it.
We're not recording. Yeah, this is executive session. Okay. Next is Ulysses.
No, he's actually because he's on. Well, we're not recording anymore, so it doesn't matter. But he can. So this is just so he can hear us.
Yeah. Do you want to speak?
I don't know if you all can hear me.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Oh, perfect. So I'll preface this by saying a couple months ago, you all might have read an interesting article that was put up on Blavity, which is kind of like it's a blog essentially, that talked about a student that from another institution that filed a bias matter about being called the N-word. So since this is executive session, although this Zoom is recording, just so you know.
No, we stopped the recording.
No, it says it's recording.
Oh, that recording should have been stopped.